Today's healthcare can be confusing, frustrating, and at times downright scary. Here to help with clearing up the confusion, putting an end to the frustration, and making it a lot less scary, here from Los Angeles are your hosts, Eric and Roy, on the Informed Patient Radio Show.
Welcome to the Informed Patient Radio Show, and we are your hosts, Eric and Roy. Today's guest is Chantel Zimmerman of the Art and Soul Lab located in Woodland Hills, California. Welcome, Chantel.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Thank you for coming in. Let's first have you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am an inspirationalist. I inspire people to take actions that improve their life and their world around them. So I do that using mindfulness practices, creativity practices, and spiritual practices.
Okay. And you're currently working at the Art and Soul Lab in Woodland Hills. And if you can give us a little background on how it started, what you do there, and what really led you up to doing what you're really doing, because there's always a backstory for everybody getting into what they do.
So the Art and Soul Lab is my company. I'm an entrepreneur, and it's just me working with that company.
Okay.
I lead workshops, classes, events, Artist Way, Soul Collage. I also lead Labyrinth Walks, mindfulness.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
And I work with corporate wellness and personal wellness, and I do business development as well. So a lot of different things.
Oh, very nice.
And the way that I got into it,
right.
I was actually started my own company called Sustainable Works.
Oh, okay.
In Santa Monica, mm-hmm. And I was a radical environmentalist at the time and did a lot of work to support the environmental movement and educate individuals on what they could do to reduce their environmental impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I took an Artist Way workshop, and it changed my life. I hadn't been singing. I'm also a singer and a mixed media artist, and I hadn't been singing for years.
Okay.
With the Artist Way, I realized that I hadn't been doing the things that really touched my heart and soul. Even though the environment was deeply important to me, creativity and finding my own inner wisdom and my own voice became even more important. And I recognized that this is something that I think a lot of people around the world need. We live lives of quiet desperation, mm-hmm. John Mayer. You know, we are not doing what it is we truly want to do, and we're doing our 9-to-5s and all of that. So I took this Artist Way workshop and recognized that, oh, I could be doing this. I'm already leading workshops with the environmental education.
Okay.
So I trained for 2 years and started leading Artist Way workshops and left my company.
Oh.
I said, okay, I'm done. I know this is my baby, but it's time to go. And from there, it just blossomed and grew in ways that I couldn't even expect or anticipate. And I guess, yeah, that's the quick of it.
Now, did you start right away in Woodland Hills?
No, I actually started in the South Bay. I was in Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach, Redondo Beach.
Nice place out there.
I love it out there. And I moved out to the San Fernando Valley in the early teens. I guess it was 2010, 2011, something like that.
What was
the impetus for me to move?
Yeah.
My husband, I know the big H word.
Oh.
My husband.
That's always a good reason to.
Like, it was somebody else.
He works in the film and television industry.
Okay.
And yeah, so we needed to come here.
Yeah, it's hot there sometimes in the summer versus out by the water in Manhattan and Hermosa.
Yeah, there's a difference between fog and intense sunlight. And so, the Woodland Hills, you've got a lot of heat. It's very hot.
In fact, there's a great restaurant out there that I like, Hennessy's.
Oh, in the South Bay. Yeah, there's two Hennessy's, actually.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good steak sandwiches there.
Too. I've heard of them. I haven't been there personally myself.
Oh, wow.
Well, I would recommend Green Temple. The Green Temple is the best vegetarian food I've had. It's in the Riviera Village. I give them a high five plus stars.
Wow,
they're amazing.
Definitely got to try it.
Yeah. Okay, steak there, though.
So you set up shop in Woodland Hills. Where in Woodland Hills were you setting up shop?
I don't actually have a storefront.
Oh, okay.
So I rent places and I do workshops and labyrinth walks at different locations. So it depends. And
what about the labyrinth walks? Where do you guys do those?
I do that at the Prince of Peace Church on Woodland, let me back up. 5700 Rudnick Avenue. And I do that on the third Thursday of the month.
Mm.
And then I also co-facilitate Labyrinth Walks at the Holy Spirit Retreat Center in Encino. And those happen on the equinoxes and the solstices.
Okay. So I know you do labyrinths and soul collage and workshops and classes. Can you kind of just kind of briefly talk to us about each one of those and like give a little background and what your normal person goes and does it for?
Okay. Well, I'll start with labyrinths. So okay. I'm a certified labyrinth facilitator, certified through Veriditas, which is an organization in San Francisco that is promoting labyrinths worldwide and labyrinth education.
Okay.
And so I've been leading labyrinth walks now for the past, I guess, six years. And walked and meditated for a number of years. I've been meditating for, I realized it was actually 28 years that I've been doing some form of meditation.
Wow.
Whether or not it was
nice.
Moving meditation. So labyrinth walking is a form of moving meditation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that labyrinths are mazes. A labyrinth, for those of you who are listening who don't know, a labyrinth is a circular icon made up of concentric circles. And there is a center and an entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between traditional mazes where there are dead ends and choices to be made and you have to figure out how to get out, a labyrinth has only one path.
Right.
So the entrance and the path within the labyrinth leads you to the center of the labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the center of the labyrinth, you follow the path back out and it leads you to the exit of the labyrinth. So this one path is said to help you to get and to your own center, to find your center.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a form of moving meditation. Labyrinths have been around for, I don't know, 4,500, 5,000 years. They're found all over the world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we don't actually know like what their original use was for. Hmm. There's a lot of speculation. I just happen to think it was somebody who knew how to draw really well. Right. And they were fooling around with spirals. And labyrinths are loosely based on spirals. And if mm-hmm. we think about the world around us, you know, the galaxies are spirals. All that stuff. So
is the atom and electrons, protons going around. Everything. Yeah, you're right. Everything seems to revolve around something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And labyrinths are also, the majority of them are circular in mm-hmm. nature. So again, that familiarity with circles, circles in the face, circles in the fruit, circles in the sun, the moon, et cetera.
Right.
So it's a very human phenomenon. Phenomena.
And I just want to point out, it's probably, don't equate this with a corn maze.
Right. So, no, this is really important. Yeah. A lot of people, when they hear labyrinth, they think of a hedge maze. They think of a corn maze. These are actually flat on the ground. There's no depth. There mm-hmm. can be, but usually there isn't. And they can be made out of anything. They can be made out of stone. They can be made out of grass. It really is based on the imagination of the individual who creates it. Mm-hmm. And there are many different types of labyrinths. So, again, a great place to find labyrinths would be to look at the Worldwide Labyrinth Locator. And from that, on the internet, what you would find is labyrinths within your community by putting in your zip code.
Are there some that are more popular than others?
In terms of style?
Yes. Or maybe more desired by the general person that's looking at this?
That's a really great question. There are traditional labyrinths, and then there are what is called the Chartres. Which is based on a labyrinth found in the Chartres Cathedral in France, in a Gothic cathedral. And a lot of people like the Chartres Cathedral labyrinth, and they make replicas of it because it's a little bit more complex than the traditional labyrinths. There are the system has more 180-degree turns. It takes longer to get into the center than the traditional labyrinth. And in fact, what we see is that if we look at the 4,500 to 5,000 years ago, the use of labyrinths, they kind of became hidden and we didn't know what they were used for. And then in the 1200s, the church brought them back in. And that's where we see this Chartres replica or Chartres labyrinth. And they were used at that time, it's thought, as a metaphor for a pilgrimage. Mm. So for people who couldn't get to the Holy Land, what they would do is they would get to a cathedral and then they would walk the labyrinth as an act of getting to the Holy Land or as an act of getting to their God. And now in the in the 1980s, what we see is a contemporary use of the labyrinth. And and again, the predominant, you would probably find more Chartres labyrinths than traditional labyrinths, and they're found still all over the world. And what's interesting is they've expanded out of the church. So we find labyrinths in day spas, in hospitals, mm-hmm. hospices. Labyrinths are found in universities, in elementary schools, prisons.
Wow.
Their use, it's such a creative modality. So as a moving meditation, you can use them for just contemplative work. You can also use them for problem solving. Google has a labyrinth on site, and they use it for, you know, problem solving and conflict resolution. And we see that that's happening with grief work, and a variety of techniques can be applied to the labyrinth.
That's interesting. I did not know that, you know, that places like Google be using it as a conflict resolution and problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's a really innovative tool. And again, they say that, you know, labyrinths, you never walk the same labyrinth twice, even though you may walk the same labyrinth. It's not the same experience because you're different. It's a different time of day. It's a different experience. So every opportunity when you step into a labyrinth, you have a chance to learn something new. And the labyrinth itself is thought to be a metaphor for life. Mm-hmm. So just like life has twists and turns, has beginnings and endings. It has long, dry stretches and very tight, oh my gosh, I think I'm close to the center. And then you realize that you're not even close, even remotely close to
right.
the center.
Yeah.
So what we find is that when you're on the labyrinth, mm-hmm. you learn about yourself. It becomes a mirror to show you how you are out in the world. So for example, let's say there's an adage within the labyrinth community that says, you can't get lost in the labyrinth because there's only one path that leads you to the center, but you can lose your way.
No, okay, yeah.
And the way that you lose your way is maybe you weren't paying attention to the path and you end up in the center again. So a question you might ask yourself would be, what do I need to do about getting more centered?
A good reflection of life in general, sounds like. You
know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. And the meditative part of it, we know that meditation is focused attention. And when you do meditation, most meditators have an anchor. That anchor can be the breath. It can be a mantra.
Mm-hmm.
It could be any sort of thing that you focus on. And with the labyrinth, the focal point is the path.
Oh,
and the next step that you're taking. So it's even like life in that way. We don't know where we're headed, even though we think we do. All we can do is take the very next step and be in this present moment, whether or not we're aware of it or not, right? So we take that step and it leads us somewhere. And that's a lot like the labyrinth as well.
Oh, yeah. And I personally have done the labyrinth a few times. And each time I did it, if I look back, I did it differently. My very first time, of course, you know, I was a little skeptical and I thought, oh, okay, this looks like a puzzle, you know, and I just kind of walked through it. And then a couple more times, one time I went really slow. I just focused on the steps. I just kind of walked, looked at the ground and kind of, you know, saw it being a track. And my third time I did it, but I was in deep in thought with something and I didn't realize when I got to the center. So with that, so looking back, maybe that's how I was treating life. My very first time, I just went through it. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't take it very seriously. But, you know, the other ways I did it were different depending on what was in my brain or my mind at the time. So,
yeah, I love that. One of the things I recently worked with the Veterans Affairs with mm-hmm. the Labyrinth. So I was right. there for a year. I had started volunteering and then they brought me in to actually do labyrinth work. And I remember that everybody who participated in the labyrinth, they had their very own experience. And it was very much like what you said. They had no idea what it was.
Right.
Sometimes they just did it and they were like, what's this? And then other times it had a profound impact. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I love about labyrinths, I encourage everybody to meditate, right? I think it's so important for our well-being. However, I do know that there are people who have a lot of difficulty with the idea of sitting quietly, sitting still, mm-hmm. and trying to have some silence in their mind. The labyrinth, I call it the gateway to seated meditation, because with the labyrinth, all you need to know how to do and be able to do is walk.
Right.
So you step in and you let the labyrinth do its work. And unlike Tai Chi, where you have to have a teacher, or yoga, where you need a teacher, or even meditation, right? With the labyrinth, it's something that we all innately get on a very visceral level, because we see the symbol and we say, oh, that looks familiar, mm-hmm. because of its connection with the spiral and the circle. Mm-hmm. And then we say, let me step in. And then it automatically slows us down, because if you have to do a 180-degree turn when you're walking, you can't do that at high speed, right? So you do a 180-degree turn in the labyrinth and you've done an about face. So one moment you were looking in one direction, thinking about it in a particular way. The next moment you've turned around 180 degrees, and whatever you were thinking about or contemplating on now has a completely different opportunity for a shift in perspective. So
sure,
it's an interesting tool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Maybe you can tell us a little bit, and this is, I have to tell you, with my background as a nurse and a naturopath, I'm not too familiar with soul collage.
Soul collage. Well, soul collage is interesting. It's an intuitive collage process. So I really want people to recognize that they have their own innate wisdom. Mm-hmm. And we forget that a lot of times. We listen to our doctors and we think we have to do exactly what our doctors tell us. And mm-hmm. and in a lot of cases, we should. There are times when we should, and then there are times when we should ask questions. And,
right.
You know, so I think it's important that we listen inward. And I think our minds get in the way. Mm. So soul collage is an opportunity for individuals to do collage work where we allow the part of ourself that speaks in the imaginal, the mm-hmm. part of ourselves that speaks through imagery, like the part that dreams at night,
okay.
to have a voice.
Oh.
Right? So we have different forms of communication. We have the verbal form of communication. We have the body language mm-hmm. form of communication. And then right. there's that part of us that talks in imagery. So what we do with soul collage is we actually allow the images to grab us. So in a traditional soul collage experience, I would invite people to grab a couple of magazines mm-hmm. and flip through and see what kind of a reaction they have to the images that they see. Are they drawn to an image? Do they have an aversion to an image? And then respond to that. So you're really, again, I'm very much in this idea of present moment and mm-hmm. listening. So as you're sifting through the magazine, wow, I like this. Ooh, I don't like that. Oh, that's creepy. Ooh, that's really pretty. All these things are going on. And what you're doing is you tear out in accordance to that. And then you create a card. They're 5x8-inch cards. And ultimately, you create your own personal deck of soul collage cards. Mm-hmm. And this deck, you've selected the images. You've created the cards. And then we do journaling work with the cards, because there's a belief in the soul collage community that by using your soul collage cards and working with the images within them, that part of us that has something to say that is within, maybe in the subconscious or that is not in that verbal form, mm-hmm. it has something to say. And so we dialogue with the cards.
Oh.
You know, what is it that you have to say to me? Speaking as the imagery. Mm-hmm. So if this image had its own voice, what would its voice be?
Oh, okay.
And then people are able to gain a lot of insight and wisdom, their own personal wisdom, because they're asking the card that they've made the questions, and then they're answering those questions as the card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And this is, so it's an interesting technique. A lot of therapists use this technique to do work with individuals because, again, it's a way to kind of get out of the conscious mind. And mm-hmm. I mean, you're always in your conscious mind, right. but to get your own mind out of the way and get out of your own way mm-hmm. and discover something new. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's a great process. I've been doing soul collage. I've been a trained facilitator since 2007 or 2008, and I lead workshops every other month. And then I also have what's called a soul collage journey, because you can do an introduction to soul collage and just get kind of put your foot into it and taste mm-hmm. what it's like. But if you really want to do some deep work with soul collage, then the soul collage journey enables you to look at issues like your femininity or your masculinity, or look at your inner child, or do work with, I've done labyrinth work with soul collage. In fact, I'll have people walk labyrinths with their cards and see what the two of them together, how that informs. You know, so that's soul collage.
I was going to ask if you do it as groups or individual or both, or how do you facilitate it?
I predominantly do work with groups. I can do individuals, and I will incorporate that. I also do coaching, one-on-one coaching, and I'll incorporate I incorporate all my tools dependent upon the moment, because I don't believe that one size fits all.
Right.
I think that everybody has a different way of getting to the information that they need. And so I don't want to tell you this is the only way. So I invite people to find which way works for them. And so we play and we listen. I think in this society, we don't listen enough. And most of what I do offers the opportunity for people to listen. So you're doing the labyrinth. You're listening as you walk. You're listening to what comes up. You do soul collage. You're listening to what the images have to say. You know, you're listening. And the more you listen, then you know. Like, you know, sometimes we can go all day long and not eat because we're not listening. We're busy working and we've got to get more work done and we've got to work it harder and we've got to be faster and better.
Right.
And then we realize I'm famished. But if we had just gone a little slower, paused, took a minute to breathe and listen.
Right. And I can see the takeaway, you know, listening more. And I can also say that, you know, our listeners should listen more to our show.
There you go.
And they learn more.
Yes.
I was going to ask you a quick question on the cards. So you mentioned a size like 5x8, but I'm assuming that people also use different size cards, or is that a kind of a one? Like you said, no, there's not a one size fits all type thing, but is that just more the popular size, or?
So soul collage is actually a registered trademark process created by Sina Frost, who passed away this year. We're very sad to lose her. And in the soul collage process, many people do collage work. It's not anything new. But in the soul collage process, the format that they use is a 5-inch by 8-inch card on a mat board. And that's what they would recommend. It's a large enough size that you can actually get some good material onto it, but it's not so large that it's unwielding and where you're unable to actually work with the card. And I've actually taken my card deck. I have well over 300 cards now, and I select a card every day and I journal with it. My card deck, I've made a travel deck out of. So I've actually gone into like a 2.5x3.5-inch card just so that I can shuffle a little more easily.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now I have a question also about maybe you can explain further about
laughter yoga.
Laughter yoga.
Yeah. I'd love to talk to you.
I know I was looking around the websites or anything and I saw that briefly, and I even saw, I guess there was a laughter facilitator or something to that point. And I was like, okay, I don't know much about that. So we're, you know, interested in know more about that.
So I'm a laughter yoga leader. I was trained by Shelley Bell in Northridge, and she's awesome. She's a laughter yoga trainer. And laughter yoga was created in India in 1995 by an MD, Dr. Madan Kataria. Hmm. And his premise, essentially, he studied the work of Norman Cousins.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that name came to my mind right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what Dr. Kataria realized is there's actually been a lot of study on laughter and humor for healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually called gelatology. There are people who study laughter are gelatologists.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well.
Now you know.
now you learn something new every day.
That's why you have to listen to the show.
Yeah, so this idea of laughter yoga is that the brain doesn't know the difference between if you're laughing at something that's actually funny or if you're laughing for no reason at all. Mm. And the healing comes because laughter, since the brain doesn't know the difference, laughter helps the body physiologically to release a variety of hormones, serotonin, dopamine, you know, all of these feel good, happy chemicals, if you will. And it also, laughter helps a lot with oxygenation. We bring, you know, oxygen into the body,
right.
and that's good for the body. So Dr. Madan Kataria started a laughter club, and they just started with, he was doing research for something he was going to write. And he started a laughter club in India where people just came to the park and they started telling jokes. And at first it was awesome. It grew rapidly within the first week. But by the second week, what they found is that they were running out of jokes and the jokes became more crass and people were like, forget this.
Yeah.
And he said, give me a minute. Give me a day. Let me think about this. And he realized that it's not that you're what you're laughing at. It's that you're just laughing. So he created what are called laughter exercises. Mm. Now, I'm going to invite both of you because I've given you in your actually, we've got an oxygen mask sitting right here on the table. I know it's imaginary. And all of you who are listening to the show, you are also attached to this mask, thing. So I'm going to ask you to put on your face your gas mask and take a nice big deep inhale. And let it out. Oh no, it's laughter gas. So what we do with laughter yoga is we actually do laughter exercises where we will laugh intentionally. And so, you know, you can have laughter pills, you can have jolly gibberish, you can have laughing gas, you can have all sorts of things that help you to laugh in the moment. And you do this, we do hour-long classes. And in between doing the laughing, we do deep breathing. That's where the yoga comes in. So there's no poses in laughter yoga other than a little bit of gentle stretching. So it's laughing, breathing, gentle stretching, rinse, repeat. And then at the end of a session, we will do a guided visualization around happiness. And so people actually have to ground because when you laugh, you raise your heart rate, there's a lot of excitation that can happen, and you can really raise your energy level. Plus you're getting deep breathing going on, so you can have a lot of I can't think of the word right now, but you know, when you need to expel anything that might be coming out of your lungs, you know, you actually it's helpful for that as well. And then at the end you need to get just sort of grounded and centered, and that's why we do the meditation. But what they have found is that laughter truly is one of the best medicines. I mean, it can help with insomnia, it can help with pain, it can help with your improving your immune system. And there are studies that have proven this. I mean, this is again started in 1995. There are laughter clubs all over the world. People who meet regularly to laugh regularly.
I was just going to say, I remember seeing something some years back where they were doing a study and they had like watching the Three Stooges or watching comedy shows. And these were patients that had some kind of an illness, and there was quite a bit of improvement through the laughter. So it's I guess it'd be along the same lines as what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's Dr. Norman Cousins, Patch Adams. We all remember the Robin Williams movie.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so, and again, the difference between what they were doing and Dr. Kataria, they had to have humor in order to induce the laughter. Dr. Kataria discovered that you don't have to have the humor. The physical act of laughing, and in fact, even smiling, they've done with happiness research, they've done studies with MRI studies where they'll see that when you smile, a particular area of your brain lights up. Well, the interesting thing about that is that if I or you or someone else smiles at someone else, that same area of the brain lights up. So technically, we can help people to feel better just by smiling at them and then add laughter to that. And the body, again, just like athletes who are training and they visualize winning, they imagine that they're doing the running or they imagine that they're hitting the ball. The body goes through those motions and doesn't know the difference. The same is true for laughter. So when you're laughing, the body is still going to induce all of those happy chemicals
right.
without having to have any humor. Mm. And then some spontaneous laughter can emerge from that.
Sure.
So
he... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think Eric and I were practicing a little of that the other day watching a funny cat video when all these cats took off like nobody's business. But
or the puppies that walk in circles around their food.
And so two things I can say about the laughter, and you brought up a good point. I think maybe we can look at it as we do have the laughter inside of us. We don't have to have the induction of a joke mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. order to produce it. But on the same token, like yesterday, Steve just said, you know, we were kind of watching a very funny cat video. I remember, and I'm not really too much into the cat videos, but this one was very funny. And, and if something's very funny, I have that long laugh where you feel like your whole body's going to kind of explode and everything. You kind of lose your breath.
The tears come.
But unfortunately, this was at work. And there's this stigma about if you were to laugh or have a really good laugh at work, it's almost looked down upon.
Yeah, you're goofing
and
off.
I think it's sad that if you're going to have a good, really good laugh at work, that it seems counterproductive, or you're not doing your work, or it's just not embraced.
I am so grateful that you said that. I think that adults don't play enough. They say that the mm-hmm. average child laughs between like 400 and 500 times in a day. Huh. The average adult, up to 20. There's a reason that we're grumpy, irritable, why we have dis-ease, why we are not in the best health, have yeah. chronic stress. We don't lighten up enough. We need to get silly.
Totally
we need to get silly. And not only that, we're not taken seriously. If you're laughing, then you must not be serious. You must not be professional. Mm-hmm. All of that sort of thing. Moreover, what we find is that with respect to people laughing and, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
Sorry.
But I totally agree with you. I think laughter should come back in. We should, work doesn't, like, for instance, let's just take work. I know we're trying to be serious and we're trying to be professionals, but I also think people should look at and embrace laughter. Work should be also fun. Mm-hmm. Who said it has to actually be real grindstone work?
Well, and actually they've done studies where they look at athletes and being able to be at peak performance and how long you can sustain peak performance. And you can't. And in fact, what happens is you can only sustain peak performance for a short period of time, and then you have a down, and then you can kind of come back up, and then you go down. And in that up and down, you're losing efficiency. So 80% performance is the best way for a long sustained ability to perform in the workplace or in any situation. And this was for athletes. So we have to think more in terms of life balance and corporate wellness today is alive and thriving. And kudos to all of the companies that are out there who are embracing corporate wellness.
Yes.
And we've got to start thinking about how can we support employees, and whether or not it's laughter or meditation or yoga or exercise on the work site,
right.
All of these kinds of things can support that.
Like everybody talks about Yahoo and Facebook and Google on how they've completely changed the work environment. Like you see pictures of coders with their laptops on beanbags,
mm-hmm.
and that's considered working.
Mm-hmm.
Or the sleep pods or those mm-hmm. resting pods they have at one of the places. And they can, I think at Google, they can get on that bike that sits many people and they could just take a cruise around the campus
that's
and
great.
Have a meeting. So, I've been... Most of the places I've worked at has been the traditional desk, computer, laughter,
well,
be serious and stuff like that. So I'm hoping it starts infusing in other professions
mm-hmm.
and work sites.
Well, and it harkens back to what you said a little while ago. I remembered what I was going to say. If we look at the generation, like the baby boomer generation and the generation right before that, they were being told things like, you better wipe that smile off your face or I'll wipe it off for you.
Yeah.
So with the people that I've worked with, with laughter yoga, it's very hard sometimes for people to laugh.
It's a shame.
They don't feel safe or they feel shamed, right? They've been told that they what are you laughing at? You've got nothing to laugh at. You know, there are people starving in some other country somewhere.
Yeah, the shamefulness,
Yeah. So I think that not laughing is, there's a stigma with laughing, and it is an unfortunate thing because, again, when we think about health and wellness, we really do have to think outside of the box in terms of health and wellness. Of course, traditional doctors are really important, and there are all of these wonderful modalities that can support, that are, you know, they are not alternative but complementary, complementary to traditional medicine.
All right. Well, we're running out of time now, but how can people learn more about you, get in touch with you, or what kind of, you know, if you give us that information? We'll also put it up on the website.
I appreciate that. So my website is
www.artandsoullab.com,
and the "and" is spelled out. I lead, as I mentioned, monthly labyrinth walks at the Prince of Peace Church in Woodland Hills on the third Thursday of the month.
Third Thursday of the month.
I do other creativity workshops like The Artist's Way and Soul Collage, and those are happening at different times, and you can see that on my website. I also lead contemplative groups, and so they're... And with respect to creativity, though, let me jump back. The Artistic Women, Inspiring Artistic Women, is a free opportunity on the first Friday of the month in Woodland Hills.
Oh, okay.
You can call me, 747-24-TRUST.
Oh, well, very nice.
Good number.
You're also with the Holistic Chamber of Commerce at Woodland Hills, correct?
I am the president of the Holistic Chamber of Commerce at Woodland Hills, and we meet on the fourth Tuesday of the month, and our location is changing. So look at the website again, the Holistic Chamber of Commerce.
So if any holistic members or practitioners in the community and they're around the Woodland Hills area, should probably check out maybe joining the chamber.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you again for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. It was a great show, I think.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I hope that people get some relief and find well-being in whatever form they need. So thank you for your time and for having me.
No problem. Thank you. And thank you again for listening to another episode of the Informed Patient Radio Show.
You have been listening to the Informed Patient Radio Show with Eric and Roy. For more information, please visit us at informedpt.com. Tune in next time for more information regarding the healthcare system and how it affects all of us.